I want to talk some more about the general subject of hearing the voice of the Eternal, or hearing the voice of the Lord of the House, which, of course, plays such an important part in how to grow lotus blossom. Both the asking and the hearing, or, you know, they run as a theme, you know, a thread through the entire experience. And yet, as I pointed out, there's any number of crackpots out there who think that God's telling them to do things ranging from the ordinary to the bizarre. Generally, the bizarre, I think. Most ordinary people don't tend to go around, most normal people don't go around saying that God's telling them to do things, or even advising them to do things. I'd say, first of all, you know, God does not order people to do things. You can write that off. Reverend Massey used to say, the real truth does not insist on truth. The real truth does not insist on truth. The Eternal does not try to take away your free will. So if you hear voices in your head telling you to get a knife and go after your neighbor, well, that's definitely not the Eternal. Obviously, there's a perceptual issue there, too. The real truth does not insist on truth. However, the Eternal can put it to you very plainly. Very plainly. And then it's our choice. And I have myself heard, at very key points in my life, have heard the voice of the Lord of the House in that way, putting it to me very plainly. And I knew that there was nothing forcing me to. It wasn't like some external force driving me to do something. It was my choice entirely. And yet, since I knew where it came from, I knew it wasn't me. And I knew that the intent was utterly good. Why would I not do it? You know? And when I followed that, I've never regretted it. Never regretted it. Whereas when I followed my own impulses, well, I've often regretted it. And a sensible person can tell the difference, frankly. But I'd like to be a kind of play a double role, a little bit of devil's advocate here, and maybe Mara's advocate is a better way to put it, and then someone who is doing what I do a lot, which is, you know, I regard it as a fundamentally important part of my job, is to encourage people, some of whom often don't think that they can actually turn to the Eternal and get help there, encourage people to try to do so, and express my faith, which I have, that everyone can do so. Everyone has the innate capacity, because everyone has a Buddha nature. Yet, as I've also pointed out, you know, it is fraught with dangers and difficulties. And I do understand, not entirely unsympathetically, I do understand why people can, when faced with the sometimes daunting number of risks involved in this, can back off from it and say, well, that's just too out there. You know, I'm not going there. But it really, if it's done right, it's not out there. And you don't lose your spiritual grounding in doing it. It helps keep you grounded. So let's just look for a moment at some of the Mara's advocate positions, which I've touched on before. One of them I've already mentioned, that basically that some pretty loony people have thought that God was telling them to do things. And this has happened not only in non-Buddhist religions, but it's happened in Buddhism as well. That people have claimed to be a kind of a have this special, you know, that getting special messages from the Buddha or whoever, and or that they're somehow the chosen one or something like that. And if you look at, if you read How to Grow the Lotus Blossom, you look at the immense humility that Rinpoche Master manifests, so you really see the antidote. No, I am not God. There is nothing in me that is not of God. I am not God comes first. I am not Kanzian. I'm not going to ever be the savior for anyone. I can't even save myself. I need the Eternal's help as much as any other human being does. And one always has to remember that. If that's your starting place, and that's called first mind or beginner's mind, by the way, and you don't really leave that beginner's mind ever, you don't never leave the need for it. We can get swollen headed and forget it, but we never leave the need. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, the further you go, the more you need to remember how much you need the Eternal's help, how much you need the help of man as well. Not mutually exclusive. It's just you cannot put the help of man in the place of the help of the Eternal and have it work out. If you put the Eternal first, however, the Eternal will provide the help of man for you when you need the help of man. And in fact, we need both. So obviously, if that humility is front and center, so to speak, one is less likely to go down that path of thinking that one's the one and only one who's getting the message from God and is going to save everyone else. That's bogus, as Basil would say. That's bogus, isn't it? You don't have to buy into that. And yet, out of any number of people at any one time, you might be the one person who really is hearing the voice of the Eternal. But if so, it's that at that time and in that situation, and then later on it will be someone else, you know. It won't always be you. It's not always anyone. Another thing that's a real help for this kind of problem of basically what is it kind of, if it's just in a mild form, it's just kind of normal swollen-headedness and complacency. But if it's in an extreme form, it's outright nuttiness. But it's just to remember the kind of mantra that her master learned in Sojiji that helped her keep on track when she was a very young monk. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. The Eternal's never wrong, but I could be wrong. I might be thinking I'm hearing the voice of the Eternal. I might not be. I'm human. I can be wrong. Yet I have to say for myself, there have been times when I've heard the voice of the Eternal and there simply was no question and no possibility of doubting that this was simply, it was not me. I ended up in this area because of exactly that. And it was like, at the time, it was like someone speaking in my ear. And I knew, I recognized it was not coming from me, it was being given to help me, and that if I was wise, I would do exactly what recommended. And in that case, it was really, I see it as the Eternal's compassion for me as well as for others. And there have been some other instances like that. And it was never, when I've experienced it like that, it's never been like I was somehow going to save someone else. It was that I was getting help. I was getting the help. Accept the help that's being given and don't query it. And it was never anything non-perceptual. It's about something practical that I could do, or direction I needed to go in that would help. I think many of us who became monks, you know, became monks through listening to that. And I think we all of us who have undertaken serious training, whether it's monks or lay people, you know, we were listening to something when we first sat down and looked at the wall. You know, we were listening to something, whether we knew it or not. Maybe we didn't know it, but we were. So another of the little Mara advocate positions, you might say, is this issue of, well, so often the person who, you know, thinks they're hearing the voice of the Eternal doesn't seem to be going with other people in their family or their group or their monastery or whatever. They seem to be in some way bucking the system. But well, of course one can buck the system out of sheer stubborn cussedness too. And in general, and it is simply as a matter of historical fact, you know, it really is, that people who are deeply spiritual do go against the grain of worldliness. They run against the grain of worldliness. And they run it against the grain of worldly religion. What I've always thought of as gray religion. I think I might have learned that term from a master, but if you remember at the beginning of How to Grow Lotus Blossom, Reverend Master says that most religions attempt to console our fears. But deeper religion, the deepest religion, you know, helps us transcend them. So what you might call the more externalized or more worldly aspects of religion attempt to console people's fears, and a person who's gone deeper is going to seem to go against the grain of the more shallow. That may look to a lot of people like there's something wrong with them, but it doesn't mean there is something wrong with them. So it's the kind of general principle that I'm talking about here is that hearing the voice of the Eternal is a matter, and following the Eternal is a matter of individual training. It can only ever be a matter of individual training. Because it's a matter of individual choice. One person chooses this or does not do so. Each man his karma makes and must carry for himself. This is just pure Buddhism. You're very fortunate if you find a place, as there are places in our Sangha where many of them, where people are together following the Eternal. What an amazing thing that is. What a refuge that is. That's what we're all trying to do. And even within that context, on any given day, a person can feel pretty alone. How can you help? How can you avoid that? When in fact, you are alone. And because in this business, there's all these seeming contradictions so often coexist right side by side, right together, you know. You can feel very alone and you can at the same time be deeply comforted by training with others. And they're both true. at the same time. You know, go figure. I can't understand these things intellectually, how it is that these seeming contradictions coexist, but they're just, the truth is just bigger than my little comprehension of things. I like the way Ramesh again puts it, we go alone and we go together. We don't just go alone or just go together. We go alone and we go together. So the fact that you can't just kind of take a vote on, you can't just take a vote on what it is to get the, you know, the hear the voice of the Eternal. That doesn't stand against the fact that you really can hear the voice of the Eternal. There can be something meant for you and you alone, and that frequently is the case. I think it most often is the case. And what the person next to you hears is meant for them and them alone, most often. This, of course, really points out the essential place of really an essential importance of really understanding what personal responsibility is. And, of course, without the understanding of personal responsibility, which is based in how, in our understanding of the law of karma, how the law of karma works, you know, you really don't have Buddhism at all. It's an amazing thing when you think of it that let's suppose that someone comes up to me and slaps me in the face. You know, I have a whole bunch of choices how I react. But it's an amazing thing that, from a worldly point of view, it's an amazing thing that in actual reality, the choices of how I react are independent of what that other person did. And the choices of how I react have three aspects. They have a mental aspect, they have a speech aspect, and they have an aspect in terms of physical action. The three kinds of actions. Actions of thought, actions of word, and actions of body. And how I react to that event, I am entirely responsible for. The person who hit me isn't responsible at all for how I react. And I can't put my reaction onto that person and the responsibility onto them. Each man his karma makes and must carry for himself. That person gets the karma of his action, get the consequences of his actions. I get the consequences of my actions. And it's simply not the way I react, the way I act in that situation is simply is not an excuse. If I choose to hit him back, I've chosen to hit him back, and I get the consequences of my action. If I choose not to do so, I've chosen not to do so, and I get the consequences of my action. And this is true in all circumstances. And it's true of children just as well as true of adults. This seems a very hard point of view to the world, to the worldly mind. But it's actually incredibly liberating. And whether it's hard or easy, and sometimes it is hard, it just happens to be true. It's how karma works. It's liberating because it means that when you really are living from that understanding and from that place, it means that no matter what someone else does, they actually can't hurt the real you. you know that they can't hurt the real you. Only your own actions can hurt you. Only your own actions can hurt you. That doesn't mean that another person's actions can't cause you pain and grief. They can. We all have that power over each other to some degree. But the further we go spiritually, the less that is true. Because the more we're living within our own center, this principle is tremendous for undermining the illusion, the delusion and the confusion that cause what Ramesses calls soap opera. Just people emotionally involved in one another's lives. And living only on the surface of things. So the fact that someone who's crazy can think they're hearing the voice of the Eternal, the voice of God, say, does not mean that someone can't actually hear the voice of God who's sane and actually be hearing it, because they can. And the fact that one person among all the people they know can at a particular moment be hearing something and no one else gets it does not prove that they're not actually hearing it. Sometimes you might think you're getting something and no one else is, and in fact you're not, and you're doing something and you're moving in a dangerous direction. Well, hopefully one will, you know, catch oneself. Someone else will help one get the point, you know, that one's moving in a dangerous direction. But there's no removing the essential risk, you know, because it's just part of being alive and being human, that built-in risk. You can't remove it. And the further you go spiritually, in some ways, the greater the risk. Because the more you are out there on your own a bit. That's just that increasing risk is just the price of increasing spiritual freedom. And by that I mean freedom not from the precepts, but freedom from the bonds of greed, hate, and delusion. Here's another of the kind of devil advocate positions. It's a little less extreme, but it's the one I'm actually in some ways more familiar with from my earlier years as a monk. And that is that actually hearing the voice of the Eternal is something very rare. Or you have to be somehow very special, very far along. But for most people, if you hear it at all, it's a very rare thing. And this is something that has a grain of truth in it, but it's the grain of truth is only a grain of truth, and it's not a big chunk of truth. And like any other truth, if it's misunderstood and carried too far, it turns into a real obstacle and a delusion. The grain of truth in this is that actually the further you go in the genuine conversion of karma, you might say the less static there is on the spiritual airwaves, and the more accurately you do hear and the more confidently you do actually follow your true spiritual instinct and intuition. And that is true. But again, you can't carry that too far, because if you carry it too far, then you end up saying there's just a special few people who can really hear the voice of the Eternal. And that's not true. None of us would be sitting here if that were the case, because it wouldn't have come to this training at all. And I'll tell a little story on myself here that is I've not talked too much about in the past, partly because I just haven't quite known how to talk about it, but we'll try a bit here. If one of the really noteworthy things in how I grew a lotus blossom is that River Master was part of this really genuine, deep enlightenment that was happening there was just that she really found that she could just ask and she could just really hear. And you hear her very confidently asking and asking other people to ask questions and getting an answer and doing, you know, following the guidance given. And you sit there thinking, you know, can it really be this kind of clicking right along like this and so clear and everything? And I have to say, in my personal experience, it never has been at that level. It never has been. The asking and the hearing, it's never come like that. But I don't question that it did for River Master at that time. So, when we got through 76 and into 1977, River Master had come out of retreat. While she was in a retreat there, I was actually not myself one of the people close around River Master. I was not involved in any of those kind of visions she had where she had her disciples with her. Not any of them. I was out swinging my hammer on the new, what we were building, the ceremony hall building. I was out working on that, and I was meditating as hard as I could, and I was laying the foundation for my own first Kensho, which happened in February 1977. Later on, I spent more time with, I had the very good fortune to spend a lot more time with River Master in subsequent years. And she would not infrequently say, well, ask someone who just happened to be there, you know, she said, would you ask about this, you know? Would you kind of check with the Eternal on this, you know, ask about it? And I was a little daunted. I mean, I was pretty daunted, actually, because I was not used to just kind of stopping everything and just kind of, you know, checking. And I didn't have any confidence. I was hearing anything most of the time. But I felt that I was expected to kind of come up with something. Or I relaxed on it over time, you know. I relaxed on it. River Master wasn't really asking with any expectation, you know. But I kind of felt like I needed to perform there. And I, most of the time I was drawing a blank. And It made me, I was having, as time went on, I had my own kind of self-doubt come up more and more clearly, and I just had to kind of put the whole asking thing on the back burner for a while. So I want to just describe how I learned how to ask again on a new basis. And it really grew in a conscious way, it really took off in my retreat in 98-99. And it had a point of origin, and I talk about this in my talks on how to grow a lotus blossom, but I want to talk about it in a more personal way here. I talk about it in a little more general way there, but I really learned, in 98, in the summer of 98, when I went into retreat there, right away, I found up I was up against something that's way, way bigger than I felt comfortable handling at all. And an enormous spiritual darkness. And right at the beginning of this, I had the experience of feeling like I was literally, I was tied to a railroad track. I was tied to a railroad track, and there was a whole bunch of engines lined up that were going to be rolling over me. I had this image, you know, right at the beginning of this retreat. And indeed, that's exactly what happened. It was these big past lives coming, some stuff from this life, but especially some things from past lives, and one in particular, which was just, that's all I could bear to get through that. All I could bear. And each one was the build up to it. It was a very difficult and tremendous spiritual pain involved. And each one came to its little resolution, fortunately, and got help from the Eternal. But it's from that point in my life that I really learned to ask for help, because there was nothing else that would work. And I in my talks on Lotus Blossom, I talk about this, the kind of what I call a whole being asking for help. It's just pouring out of your being. It's not any more, I guess the initial turning towards the Eternal is a matter of your choice, but then it goes beyond your personal choice. It's just pouring out of you, this cry to the Eternal, where you feel like your whole being is just looking up for dear life. And that's where I started to get a deeper orientation than I'd ever had on asking. And of course, now if you think about it, it just makes sense, but it's like I never thought about it before. Because this is not something you learn by thinking about things, it's something you learn through experience, really. But of course, if you're going to hear the voice of the Eternal, what's needed first? You've got to be putting yourself in the right position to hear first. You've got to be stopped. You've got to be stopped in your tracks, and you've got to be turned towards the Eternal. And what is that whole being cry for help? It's turning fully face on towards the Eternal. And this, of course, is what River Master is describing in the early chapters of How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. That's the real nature of the choice she's making there. She's going to full-on face the Eternal and accept what's coming, or not, and she chooses to accept what's coming. In the talk she did yesterday, River Master Mokushin was talking about that too. It comes up for different people in different ways. For one person, it'll be tied to the railroad track with the engines lined up. For another person, it'll be a black lotus. For another person, it'll be a pool of bubbling black stuff bubbling out of the ground and standing at the edge of that pool. It doesn't matter how it comes up. What matters is it's the same essential thing that's being talked about. And that's the position where I learned, speaking just for myself, really learned to ask for help at a whole new level than I'd ever done before. And that's where also it just follows that the hearing gets a lot better then. The hearing gets a lot better. So what I'm saying just in those practices, I'm not saying that everyone's got to go to that place right now before they can start hearing the voice of the Eternal, but I'm saying if you want to hear the voice of the Eternal, first face the Eternal. Turn towards the Eternal. and get yourself really still. In other words, really meditate. You know, meditation, pure meditation, is the what's being presumed in everything that we say here. Meditation and the precepts are what is the presumed platform from which we're working and teaching here. Cut all ties, give up everything. Think of neither good nor evil, consider neither right nor wrong. Control mind function, will, consciousness, memory, perception, understanding. From the rules of for meditation, we recite day after day after day. So that's my first point about getting better at hearing the voice of the Eternal. First, turn towards the Eternal and ask. When it's time to ask, ask. You can't go through the day. Of course, there are some practices that do involve going through the day asking all the time. But my problem with that is that if you do that all the time, you'll be generating a constant noise, and you may not actually give yourself enough time to hear, enough space to hear, if you're always asking. So I say, when it's time to ask, ask. And we learn this through experience, and a combination of experience and intuition. When it's time to ask, ask. I still forget. All the time I forget to ask, and when I forget to ask, I'm always regret it later. You know, and then sometimes I have a good sense to remember to ask. Like before I came over today, I remembered to ask to do this talk. I always try to remember before I do a talk, before I do a santan or a talk, to ask for help. When I forget to ask for help, it doesn't go as well. When I remember it, it goes better, it goes deeper. And yet still I forget. Aren't we funny? Aren't we funny beings? You know, how easily we forget, and yet you can have learned that your life, spiritual life, depends on that, and yet still forget. Oh, God. You know, and that reminds you, even then, you remember, okay, so I'm still someone who needs to ask for help, aren't I? I need to ask for help about asking for help. You see. We're never going to cease to be human. No, we're never going to cease to be human. So, when Dogen says, if your first step is false, you will immediately stumble, this is what I think of. My first step I want to remember, am I actually turned towards the Eternal? Am I remembering to ask for help? Am I remembering to meditate? That's my first step. Then here's something else. When you've put your question, then don't insist on it. And don't sit there and watch your watch then. God, please help me. Now you have 5 minutes. Just be still. Be still. There's a lovely verse in the Bible. I don't remember where it's from. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. River Master calls in her commentary on the precepts, she says, that which she refers to the Eternal, that which speaks in silence and in stillness, the still small voice. The Eternal isn't going to shout, isn't going to drown anything else out. It doesn't work that way. Speaks in silence and stillness. And don't expect it to literally be a voice. A few times I literally have heard it as a voice, like someone speaking in my ear. I literally have heard it a few times. Those were times where there was a very great need by the way, when I've heard when that has happened with me, each time there's been a very great need. Generally, it's not been like that. It's not been a voice at all. Most often, for me, it's a quietly growing intuitive sense, which I first don't even know what it is usually, and then at some point it will kind of hit me. Sometimes it can literally hit you. It's right in the third eye, what's called the heavenly heart, in the deeper teachings. I've had that happen where it's just something, it's like I just got it right in the third eye. And it's kind of like seeing it, except it's not seeing it as the physical eyes see it, but seeing the truth. Again, the eternal is always practical. It's usually something I need to do that I've been missing in some way. And it can be experienced in a number of different ways, many different ways. It doesn't matter how the message gets through. What matters is that the message gets through. And the eternal will use all of our senses and all of our experience to help us. Another thing is, don't assume that because there doesn't seem to be an answer, that there isn't an answer. And along these lines, if you remember from How to Grow Lotus Blossom, over many times Reverend Master asked a question and got a response, you know, if you wish. And you kind of sit there thinking, well, if it's if you wish, why would you even get a response, you know? But here's one way to look at that. I'm not saying it's the only way to look at it. Here's one way to look at that. That could be that many times when you kind of put the question, you don't seem to get anything. But the Eternal, in a way, can hand it back to you and say, you know, you got a brain, you got hands and feet. You know, don't, on this one, I trust you to do the right thing. Can hand it right back to you that way. And another point on that is when there seems to be nothing, experience, a lot of experience teaches you that there may not be nothing. It may be, something may be so quiet that you just have to be sit still with it a little more. Or it could be that there's still a little bit of holding on to something in the way that needs to be let go of and released. In any case, the general principle I'm coming to here is don't ever try to force it with your will. Don't ever try to force it. If you don't think you're getting an answer, don't try to force it. Just be content to put your question and sit still with it. And this is so helpful. To just know that you can actually, at any point, you can simply say, you know, I don't get something here. I need help. And you can turn towards the Eternal and say, please help. And you can then just leave it in the hands of the Eternal and go about doing what needs to be done. And you can even forget about the whole thing. If that's actually what's good to do, you can actually just forget about it. And I'll just tell you, the Eternal has perfect hearing. My hearing may be faulty at times. The Eternal is perfect. And no sincere question is ever ignored or not heard by the Eternal. This is my experience. It is my experience. This isn't just a matter of faith. It's my experience. I've had things that I've asked on and asked on and struggled with and struggled with. And all the while, it turns out, down the line, I find out the Eternal had actually worked it out right from the beginning. And I could have just I didn't have to fuss. And when I find that, I feel a bit of a fool, but also I've got better at forgiving myself for my humanity, you know, in this. And also there's been times when I've put the question and just kind of quietly forgot it like that. And then down the road, maybe days, weeks, maybe years later, bing, oh, there's the answer to that. Now, here's another thing that Rim Master often used to say. She said that that which is from the eternal is light, not heavy. And when she did that, she'd do this with her hand, like she was holding like a balloon or something very light in her hand, and it was kind of rising and falling. It's light, not heavy. Not forced, not heavy. Light. And incredibly precise and utterly benevolent and benign. That good that is beyond good and evil. That good that is beyond our comprehension. That love that is beyond our comprehension. Incredibly precise, incredibly pragmatic. As it says so beautifully in the scriptures, it does the best for everything. Does the best for everything. So here's the little irony about this thing about hearing the voice of the eternal, is we can think it's so difficult and so esoteric when actually it's actually all around us. And we're living with right within it. The further we go in training, the more we're just, as it were, kind of peripherally aware of it. Peripherally aware of it. If you kind of turn towards it and try to stare right at it to see, now what's the point here, you miss it. Whereas if you just go about doing what needs to be done and keep your focus on what's your personal responsibility, what's your training to do, then peripherally you keep getting it. And now and then it'll come along when you really need it and it'll smack you right between the eyes, so to speak. So, this talk is a... I've done other versions of this talk, but this is the most complete version I've ever done of it. Because this talk is for someone like me, as I was, say, 15 years ago or 20 years ago. This talk is to help people have confidence that they can, in sincerity, in utter sincerity and humility, ask of the eternal, and that they can come to recognize the spiritual direction given by the eternal. And that when it seems that it's most difficult and the eternal, we're furthest from the eternal, as it does when the kind of karmic clouds have come in and it's very dark, you know, how could someone as unworthy as me hear the voice of the eternal, you know, is what so often is the attitude at such times. Well, then just in that place of darkness, just be still and turn towards the eternal and put your cry for help. Just put it out there and then wait. And while you're waiting, spiritually look up rather than down. Look up rather than down. In other words, don't go with the despair. Don't go with the doubt. Just sit still within it and look up. the hearing begins with the asking. Even when you think you can't hear, you can still ask. When I was a young monk, River Master would sometimes talk about spiritual intuition and talk about how everything when we're young seems to conspire to brainwash us or, quote, educate us out of trusting our intuition and kind of force us more and more into our heads and into a kind of brain-oriented approach to everything. And, you know, the wonderful thing about meditation is it gives you a way to let that thought activity quieten down a bit and get, eventually, you know, learn what it is to get down into your hara, be drawn down into the hara in meditation, let things go deep and still and quiet. And from that place, you know, your whole being, just like you, there's a whole being asking, there's also a whole being listening. And in that place, it seems that simply non-problematical to hear the voice of the Eternal. Because in that place of deep stillness, if it's there, fine. If it's not there, fine. Because there's the confidence, the certainty that it, the Eternal, is always there. And that wherever there is a need, the Eternal is quietly addressing that need. And if I kind of need to get a message from that place of stillness, I'll get it. Just a confidence. Why wouldn't I? So you could say that what we call meditation is really whole being asking, whole being listening. And it's all part of one process. It's really whole being asking, whole being offering, whole being waiting, whole being listening, whole being following. And those are the five columns right there from one point of view. From the point of view that was given me in 1998. To the Buddha, to the Dharma.